Hello, and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 50.
This week on the podcast, Brent and I do better in our Oscar predictions than Nate Silver.
The sequester deadline looms again, and lawmakers may or may not do anything about it.
The Catholic Church continues to do nothing to help itself in the area of scandal, slowly digging its own grave.
And is Obama pushing for a federal gay marriage law just so that he can get gay married for a second time?
Senator Cruz channels his inner Joe McCarthy.
State legislators are taking up the important issues of the day, like human-animal hybrids and the need for access to quality roadkill meat.
Plus snakes, killer robots, sinkholes, and the most terrifying of them all, Guy Fieri.
All this and more. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. This is Brain Trust Live. Happy 50th podcast anniversary.
50th week anniversary.
Exactly. We're coming up on a year, people.
Next week actually is a year, because there was one week where we did two podcasts over 3 weeks over the holidays. Yes. There wasn't really much news then. So next week is our 1 year anniversary.
Yeah.
So we're going to really pull out all the podcasting stops.
We don't know what they are.
We're not sure what that would include, but we're going to think about
actually,
it this week.
We're actually really pulling out all the stops tonight.
This is an amazing podcast that we have for you.
Yeah, we're just telling you now. And we're going to get to some of the big stories, like, you know, things like the sequester and some of those things later. But we're the type of people that watch the Oscars, and just did it, so we're going to tell
happened.
You about it.
Yeah. Well, so the first thing that we are going to talk about with the Oscars is not really out of the realm of politics, because it's about Nate Silver.
Yes. Nate Silver, apparently, has also been predicting the Oscars for the last few years.
Well, he doesn't have anything to do right now.
No.
He's not very busy.
No, he's not busy at all.
So he's just thinking of things he can statistically analyze.
Right. So, it's not quite as good.
Turns out the Oscars are much more arbitrary than the presidential election.
Yeah. Which he sort of explains.
Right.
And he sort of says that there's not polling data for him to go through.
No,
so
he's basing it off of other award shows
and
the news and
yeah, exactly.
Stuff like that.
Box office and I mean, you know, he has things that he is basing it on, but I mean, he missed more tonight than he has missed like in the entire last two elections, basically, because
he missed a lot tonight.
He's gone 99-100 in the last two elections when predicting the states, and he missed two tonight.
Yeah.
So out of the 12 or however many.
Well, I think he only predicted like the five big categories.
He didn't predict
everything. So that was. The math is going down, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He predicted
Steven Spielberg was going to win.
Right.
Now, in his defense, he had Spielberg and Ang Lee almost.
Yeah, they were almost tied.
In his match.
I personally predicted that, like me, most Americans would be kind of over Steven Spielberg because of the amount of cheesy music and telegraphing of nonsense.
Well, they were also over John Williams, apparently, too. Because
I can see it.
Yeah.
And I am a person who, by accident, saw John Williams in concert last year, and it was fun.
Yeah,
and it was exciting, but I'm over it. I'm just saying.
Well, and he also, apparently people were over Lincoln enough that Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
that was the other thing that Nate said.
Right, he thought Tommy Lee Jones.
Which was a sort of curious choice, because Tommy Lee Jones hasn't really been winning a lot.
No, and also, he's not someone who's been getting a lot of press for his part in that film.
No, I know that category was sort of a bit of a toss-up, the supporting actor category.
Right.
But, I mean, Tommy Lee Jones hasn't really been tearing
it
up
like
on the
somebody you'd be
season.
Like, well, it's probably him.
Yeah.
It wasn't like...
Who did win that?
I don't even know. Nobody knows. Oh, Christoph Waltz.
Oh, yeah, right.
Who wins everything, so of course he won.
Lila and I were in a poll tonight at the party.
This sums up our relationship perfectly.
First off, there were three people at this party.
Right.
It was Lila and I.
By party, we mean a small gathering with us and one other friend.
With fried chicken.
Right. With fried chicken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Second of all, we did Oscar ballots. And both Brett and I counted and declared that we had won.
I counted first, said that I had won. Lila recounted, said that she had won, and in fact that we had tied.
Turned out we tied. So that basically sums everything up.
Well, we're both
right
only
there.
Children.
Exactly.
We had to fudge somewhere along the way.
Right, yeah. That's just to get what we needed to get out of the evening. But the other thing that we were looking out for was whether or not Ben Affleck would thank Canada.
And he did.
In his Argo acceptance speech. And he did it on in a very random list of things that he was trying. First of all, he looked like he was a little bit hurried.
Yes, he did.
He looked a little stressed to be up there. And
he was afraid that
spending a lot of time accepting awards. You would think he would have had sort of a shtick worked out.
He was afraid that he was going to get the Jaws theme music.
That was very stressful.
That was hilarious. Every time that they played somebody off the stage, they used the Jaws soundtrack, which was sort of brilliant. I kind of
That's probably what they should have been doing
the whole time.
The whole time.
Yeah.
In any case, the former Canadian ambassador to Iran, his name's Ken Taylor, was, I guess, sort of like making waves in the news about the fact that in Argo, the CIA gets all the sort of like, you know, credit for rescuing these American hostages during the hostage crisis. And in reality, it was Canada that sort of made the plan work. Mm-hmm. The Canadian ambassador had a big part in it. Then the sort of like, you know, he was sort of upset that the film made it look like the Canadians were just hanging out and sort of along for ride and weren't being brave.
Right. And Jimmy Carter actually sort of weighed in on this as well. He was being interviewed and he mentioned his quote was 90% of the contributions to the ideas and the consummation of the plan was Canadian. So,
but that the film gives almost full credit to the American CIA.
Right.
So in any case, Ken Taylor had said that he hopes that Ben Affleck would thank Canada in his acceptance speech. Ben Affleck did not say why he was thanking Canada in his acceptance speech.
So if you
he just thanked Canada.
Right. Exactly.
Just the country of Canada.
Yeah. Now the thing is about that, and this story also sort of referenced that, you know, Ben Affleck is apparently on good speaking terms with Ken Taylor because he was like, last time I talked to Ken Taylor, he asked me to like come and voice a documentary that he's working on or something. So he said that he was sort of surprised that this is like
this came up.
An issue because they've sort of like talked about it already. And
Ben Affleck,
though,
is busy forgetting to thank everybody.
Well, he forgot to thank George Clooney
the last time.
Had to have his wife do it at the Golden Globes.
So, I mean, he's not the world's greatest award acceptor.
He's not.
And thankfully, the award season is sort of over, so he can now just sort of move past that.
Yeah. Didn't get to accept for Best Director because he wasn't nominated.
Even Seth MacFarlane mentioned in his monologue that he knew that that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Like, that the Academy knew that that was a mistake. Yeah. Like, what do you, like, once they've admitted that, though, like, that doesn't fix anything.
Right. Well, so, what I had heard is, for whatever reason, when the nominations came out and ballots went out to, like, all of the different groups, usually the DGA, the Directors Guild, announces that they sort of announce their nominations while the Academy Award nominations are sort of, like, still, when people still have their ballots. And a lot of times, those nominations will drive, because the Oscar people sort of assume that if the Directors Guild are nominating these people,
then they know
that's going to happen. But for whatever reason, the timeline of how that all went down this year was not the case. So all of the Oscar balloting people didn't have the DGA awards to sort of look at and sort of make them realize what they were supposed to be doing. So they just went dumb and didn't.
God, can't trust anyone in the Academy, can you?
No.
It's a mess. Yesterday, or I guess 2 days ago when you're listening to this, was a more important award show, some might argue.
Mm-hmm.
The Razzies. Which are, have got to be more entertaining than the Oscars. Because they try really hard with the Oscars, but it's like 4 hours long.
Yeah.
And everything that they add to make it entertaining just makes it longer. Somehow.
Yeah.
Like, I'm starting to think that maybe they should stop letting the presenters do little bits before they announce.
Well, some of them were weird. The Paul Rudd one, what's her name?
Melissa McCarthy.
I had no idea what they were talking
about. And he, like, bonked
his
nose on the microphone. And, like, Jack Nicholson gave, like, a really
weird...
Michelle Obama was involved. Like, why were any of these people doing any of this?
Yeah.
Like, get on stage, tell us who's nominated. Mm-hmm. We're already going to have to listen to them give a boring speech. So you might as well cut out
the
sort of, like, extra part.
Yeah.
But in any case, the Razzies are obviously giving the worst films of the year, the honor of having an award, I guess.
And the final installment of the Twilight saga. Really
cleaned house.
Yeah, won 7 of the 10 awards.
Yeah.
Which is just short of Jack and Jill, which took all 10 of them last year, apparently. But
Adam Sandler did win an award this year.
He did, yes.
That's My Boy.
Worst Actor, yeah.
Yeah.
And that film also won a Razzie for Worst Screenplay. Rihanna won Worst Supporting Actress for Battleship. Which is not shocking. I mean, I didn't see it.
It's not shocking, but I was just talking to some friends of ours who were both like, I think Rihanna did a decent job in Battleship. And I was like, that can't be right. There's just no way.
I remember when Battleship came out, there was like a link that was like being passed around that was like every single line of dialogue that Rihanna had. And it was, she didn't have that much dialogue anyway, but I mean, they were all just like the most
ridiculous,
crazy things that she was having to say. So that was part of it. But, anyway, and Kristen Stewart, who won a lot of the Razzies, could win a Razzie for her performance
at the Oscars
presenting an award.
First of all, I wish that she had just addressed the fact that she was limping.
Right. Well, I read something that she had crutches on the red carpet. Somebody tweeted that she had crutches.
We saw her on the red carpet, and she didn't have crutches. She was twitching her leg off.
But that was when we saw her, like, standing back there, and that was, like, right at the point where, like, all the press was, like,
she was just taking pictures.
So she probably ditched the crutches and just sort of, like, and that's why her leg was twitching, because remember, her leg was going crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It was weird. But I wish that she had just addressed it. Yeah. People have gone on stage with crutches before in these situations. So you have to.
She could have just had, like, a blinged out crutch or something like that. Like, that could have been fun.
Really?
To match her dress in some sort of
way. A cane, even. I mean, I wouldn't have faulted her for any of those things if someone had just addressed it. And also, if it hadn't looked like she had just been in the dryer. Like, what was up with her hair?
Or on a bender.
Like, her hair was everywhere. She was limping.
Terrible.
She looked really shifty. Like, I couldn't figure out.
Her voice is weird, too.
Her voice is always weird. And it was especially weird while she was acting so weird in general.
Yeah. And who was she with? Oh, Daniel Radcliffe. Right?
Yeah.
I sort of felt bad for him.
I know. It was sort of like carrying, like.
Yeah. But I thought the show was pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
There's a lot of music in it, which I can always get on board with.
There's a lot of music.
Shirley
Bassey really
is working
me out. Who I normally find a little bit infuriating as a person, is sort of right for this sort of cheesy. Because he can, like, nothing he says sounds like earnest or, like, kind.
Yeah.
But in a host capacity, that's sort of fine.
That's true.
So I feel like he's sort of like the ideal. He can sing.
Yeah.
He can tell jokes.
Yeah.
He can laugh at himself. He can laugh at the audience. He's sort of like, you know, he can do all of that.
Yeah.
So, did a little soft shoe.
Yeah, he did. Maybe Kristen Stewart had been on a bender because she won so many Razzies.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. Although, that's probably the only recognition she's going to get for those Twilight movies, so she might as well run with it.
The best year for the Razzies was when Sandra Bullock, sort of everybody knew she was going to be winning for The Blind Side, went to the Razzies the night before the Oscars to accept for All About Steve.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like,
that was sort of
endearing with her, because...
But she's like an endearing... Like, Kristen Stewart's not endearing.
And she would never go accept a bunch of Razzies for Twilight. Like, that just
absolutely
would not happen.
Not.
I mean, and what did... Where were the... Where are the Razzie Awards? They're like...
They're like Holiday Inn, like, Motor Lodge somewhere.
Right.
Like, by the airport.
The Hollywood... By the Walk of Fame.
By the Walk of Fame,
yeah.
They're held in, like, the most depressing location ever.
So good.
In any case, though, of actual news...
Yeah.
There was really just more talk about the sequester because the deadline is approaching. Because it's March 1st. It's this week. And we still don't have a plan.
There's no plan.
We wanted to sort of go over a little bit about what will happen if we don't come up with a plan, which I think is probably unlikely, but...
Right.
I mean, you know, we're about to talk to you about how Howard Dean wants us to just go... I mean, there are people calling to just sort of, like, go over this, you know, go over the deadline just to sort of, like, teach us whatever lesson they're trying to teach us. So,
I mean,
it's important to know what it is.
Right. It's an interesting thing because both... So, I mean, outside of Howard Dean, who is almost alone for the most part.
And the Democratic
side. Both sides really sort of want to get this figured out because
all
signs point to this being sort of really bad for the economy, but it's just, you know, obviously how to deal with it or what the starting point is. But anyway, it started off as they drew up this plan where they felt like these cuts were going to be so devastating.
Yeah.
That they all passed this to basically force their own hand to sort of come up with some deal. This was when we had the super committee.
Right.
And they, of course...
That super effective super committee.
Yeah, exactly. They couldn't get it done.
Right.
So now the deadline is March 1st, which is this week, and it's going to slash $55 billion in defense spending and...
$27 billion in non-defense discretionary spending. But this is sort of like by and large acknowledged to be something that's going to sort of cause the economy to slip again.
Yes.
The growth is already down, and the Congressional Budget Office says that it's going to slip a 0.7 of a percentage if these cuts continue. That's about half of a percentage off from where it's predicted to be. So that's not great.
The Bipartisan Policy Center in Washington estimates that up to 1 million jobs could be lost.
Right.
Which, not great.
Not awesome. Especially not in this
economy.
But also, and you know, we've been talking a lot about this, there's sort of like the we already passed a tax increase.
Right.
Semi-tax increase. Yeah. The Democrats sort of lost. They didn't get everything they wanted, but they got a tax increase bill. And now the Republicans are sort of like, well, we did a tax increase already, so now we just want cuts.
Right, and we have been talking about this ever since that fiscal cliff deal happened, and Howard Dean actually talks about this, too, and we'll get to sort of, like, his overall thing right. that he's talking about briefly, but, you know, the Republicans are out there saying, well, we gave you tax increases already. We gave you whatever it was, $600 million in tax increases or something, and we raised taxes on people who make over $400,000.
Right.
And now we're not giving you any more. And we saw this coming.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
it seems like the Democrats could have. I don't know.
So
maybe I'm crazy.
Yeah.
But in any case, as I think everyone has sort of known for months, and as I think the Republicans know, and this is why they're motivated to do something, most people would blame them if this did, if we went over the cliff.
Right. And they don't want to be seen as being blamed for, you know, losing a million jobs.
They're trying really hard to put the onus back on Obama. They keep calling it his sequester and saying it was his idea.
Right.
And we just went along with it, neglecting to mention the fact that everybody remembers that it was because they were acting like a bunch of fools.
And like 150 members of the House voted for it. Republican members of the House. Yeah. I mean, the Republicans passed this in the House. It was a Republican House and they passed it.
So
they can call it Obama's, but they all voted for it.
And it was necessary because of their intransigence in the, you know, in the debt ceiling negotiations.
Exactly.
It's not like Obama was just trying to threaten everybody.
Yeah.
He was doing it because our credit got downgraded. Like, hello.
Yeah.
But in any case, it's probably not going to be fixed by March 1st. They're probably going to push back the deadline again, I would guess.
Probably. Well, most people think also that everybody seems to think that there's, like, some wiggle room on that. Because, like, it's not as
if the cuts don't hit immediately.
It's not as if, like, $55 billion is gone from, you know, defense, like, on the morning of March 2nd.
There's already been some effects from it, though, because a lot of agencies are already drawing down their workforce and, you know, cutting grants and things like that because they expect their budgets to be cut. A lot of these places have to plan ahead and aren't really sure what to plan on because we're not really sure whether they're going to have a budget or not come, you know, who knows when.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's probably going to be sort of pushed off again. There's going to be like a continuing resolution of some sort that will talk, you know, where we'll maintain funding for the government until the end of March or whatever. And then, you know, they'll use this time to compromise or but they won't compromise, so I don't know what we're expecting them to do.
Exactly,
they're just going to keep pushing it back. I mean, they could just not have the sequester.
Well,
as we said, this was their own devil. I mean, they created this problem. Yeah. They could fix it by just not doing it.
They could just
pass declare
a bill that they don't want to do it.
Exactly. I mean, I don't care what hurdles they caught. You know, they forced themselves to jump through in order to make this happen. Like they could undo all of them because they were all passed by them in the first place.
Right.
So it's a sort of infuriating standoff because it's like a man-made problem.
Well, it's just another one of these, like...
It's a false emergency.
It's just... Well, and we've had so many of them,
you
know? It's just another one of these sort of, like, benchmarks where it's just sort of,
benchmarks, like the debt ceiling negotiations.
Yeah, exactly. And the fiscal cliff. And it's like, it's tiresome.
It's exhausting.
To have all of these.
It's fake news. We're bringing it to you as our top story because it's the only... It's, like, the most important news of the week, but it's fake.
Yeah.
It's not a real story.
Yeah. So Howard Dean is sort of, you know, we sort of mentioned it earlier, but he is really actually in favor of this. And I sort of have mixed emotions because I mean, some of the spending that's going to get cut is domestic spending. It's going to be things that are important to Democrats and things that we don't necessarily,
Medicare.
Right. Things that we certainly don't want to gut. But Howard Dean's point is that never ever are we going to have another chance to have this much money cut from what most people see as a bloated defense budget.
Yeah.
So he sort of is willing to have the job loss and the shrinking of the economy to be able to have the one opportunity that you may have in a lifetime to slash all of this defense
spending.
To
cut like $55 billion from defense spending.
Which I don't disagree with that part of it, but I just... You know, it seems like if you could solve it without, you know,
cutting Medicare.
I think there are still a lot of people on both sides who agree that defense needs to be cut a little bit. So I don't know that it seems like if you could get some sort of like balanced thing where you can still cut defense and, you know, maybe raise taxes just a little bit. But I know that's the problem that Republicans are having is that they don't want to raise taxes. So maybe you can't. So maybe he's right.
I mean, my concern about this is that cutting defense spending in and with it cutting all of these social programs sort of like throws the baby out with the bathwater. Like, Medicare and programs like that are programs that really directly affect a lot of people who need help.
Yes.
In a way, like, it's not okay to just, like, abandon, like, impoverished Americans so that we can cut a defense budget that is bloated in part because we've been in unnecessary wars. Like, there's wiggle room, I think, on the defense budget because we're not at war, you know, we're not going to be at war. We're getting out of Afghanistan. We're out of Iraq. Like, there's going to be reasons we can cut defense spending. There's going to be a point to doing that.
And there's not the same wiggle room with whether people get their Medicare
and this is what I always say about cutting social programs. And this is why I get mad when Obama says that, you know, Social Security is on the table for, you know, for negotiations and stuff like that. You never get those back. They never are like, let's increase social spending.
Right.
So, you know, spending for social programs, like, that never happens. Right.
You can always increase defense spending.
We do it all the time. We did it for 8 years under Bush. We've been doing it under Obama. Like, there's not, like, a limit. If Democrats start to agree that we need to increase defense spending because of some fake crisis, and we know they will because we have people like Hillary Clinton out there, you know, advocating for that. I mean, I know she's not in the Senate right now, but, like, we have hawkish Democrats that vote for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's national security is something that everyone sort of agrees on.
Yeah.
What everyone doesn't agree on is that we should be helping Americans, like, not fall through the cracks.
Right.
And we never get that spending back. So I feel like this is liberal thinking. The type of progressive thinking that I feel like gets a little bit pessimistic in a way that sort of infuriates me sometimes. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of people say stuff like this. Members of my family say stuff like this all the time, like, well, we should just do this very dramatic thing to get rid of this bigger problem, and then we'll start from scratch. If they don't come up with, you know, if they strike down Obamacare, then we'll just have to come up with a single-payer plan. Like, no, we won't. We'll never do that.
Yeah.
That will never happen. We maybe will slowly get to something close to a single-payer plan if people start to see that having a national health plan works, but we're not going to just spontaneously go to the left.
Yeah.
So, in any case, I don't know that I agree with Howard Dean on that.
Well, you don't have to.
I don't have to. No one's holding a gun to my head.
Oh, boy. Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh's ashamed of his country.
Yeah, I mean, he's real angry about all this.
We're ashamed of him, too.
Yeah.
We would like him to leave.
He said for the first time in his life he's ashamed of his country. He rants about this, like, every week on his show. Like, this is not the first time that he said he's ashamed of his country.
No. From the second we elected a black man president, he's been ashamed.
Yeah. And before, because, you know, he's been on the air for plenty of Democrats talking.
I was going to say, he probably was ashamed during the Clinton years.
Yeah, he's been ashamed for years.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what he's, you know, and he's, you know, he's talking about all of the cuts that are going to, you know, hit Americans in this sequester that include things like firefighters and meat inspection and, like, all sorts of things that come from the non-defense spending cuts that no one really wants to see. Because if we're really talking about, you know, he's sort of like talking about fear-mongering over these issues. And if those are issues that can fear-monger, then, like, let's just not cut those things.
I know, exactly.
Like, I don't understand why, you know,
where his anger is. And the Republicans are the best at fear-mongering.
Yeah, that's what they're... It's not, like, it's not a manufactured crisis to cut spending at a time when we have nothing coming in. And we're going to cut, because of that, we're going to hit programs that really do impact quality of
life. We've seen what that looks like.
We know,
Europe.
Yeah.
Austerity measures
are not fun.
No.
Like, it's not fear-mongering to be like, oh, we're going to lose air traffic controllers.
Right.
Like, that's going to suck.
Yeah.
Flights aren't going to, you know, flying already sucks. Like, it's going to suck more. That's not fear-mongering.
Yeah, they're already saying that you may have to wait longer at airports.
Yeah.
Because of
exactly.
Because they're not going to be able to.
But I also don't really understand what he suspects we should be doing about any of this. He's just ashamed of us for talking about these issues.
Well, he doesn't have any solutions.
No. He wouldn't. He's not someone who has solutions.
Okay.
In any case, I think probably internationally the biggest story of the week was that the Pope stepped down.
Yeah, well, and, well, hadn't he stepped down earlier than this week?
I don't know,
but whatever. I mean,
the Pope stepped down. It was the first time in 600 years that a Pope has stepped down.
Yeah.
Neither Brent nor I really understand why this is so massive.
Yeah.
But Catholics are really into it.
Yeah.
But the speculation about why has been the most fascinating.
Yes. Because this week there was a report that came out that basically sort of, like, implies that potentially the reason that he stepped down was because of the gay sex scandal that's going on with all of the priests.
And there's, like, a lot of, like, speculation about who within the Vatican sort of, like, knows about what's going on. Yeah. And, you know, whether or not, you know, they're, I guess they had been sort of, like, investigating these scandals at the Vatican level.
Yeah.
And sort of, you know, there's a lot of kind of, like, there's a lot of sort of scandal-like rumors floating around about various cardinals who are investigating this, about who knows what, about what, you know, whether or not this report is the reason that he stepped down.
Yeah.
It's all very high school rumor mill-ish.
It totally is.
Because everyone is sort of blaming everyone else.
Right.
And no one really seems to know what.
Right. And basically, the spokesperson for the Vatican sort of acknowledged that this report, because there were some people who were like, oh, well, this report, you know, didn't exist or whatever. But, like, the Vatican spokesperson was basically saying, acknowledged that it existed, but sort of just, like, slammed it, but didn't say that it wasn't accurate.
Right.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's like, yes.
Well, he said, before he had said he wouldn't confirm or deny whether this report existed, basically.
Right.
And then he sort of said that it did exist, but he's not going to talk about what's in it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to admit to anything. Meanwhile, the guy that they're looking to be one of the big contenders in the race to popedom.
Yes. He could be the first.
He could be the first black pope. Black,
I almost said African-American. That's wrong.
He's wrong. He's actually African.
African.
He's not American at all.
No.
Yes. He's from Ghana.
Yes.
His name is Peter Turkson. Also not a lover of gays.
No.
And in a way that is, I think, more extreme than what we've seen in the past.
Because yeah, I mean,
he's from Africa, where the type of oppression that gays face is much more serious.
Yeah, I mean,
on a cultural level.
We're not going to get a gay-loving pope.
No, of course not.
But
we might get a pope that acknowledges that gays exist and that it's probably not a good idea to, like, actively alienate them.
And it's also, I mean, what he sort of, like, got in a little bit of trouble for this week was that he basically said that the reason that Africa doesn't have all of these, like, pedophile pope or priest pedophile scandals is because that they don't have gays there, because, like, that isn't allowed in African culture.
Right.
But the whole implication is basically that you would have to be a gay person to be a pedophile, which, I mean, everyone pretty much knows at this point is not accurate. I mean, there are, you know, pedophiles of
every stripe.
All sexualities. Sexual orientation.
Pedophiles of every stripe.
Yes.
Uh-huh. It's interesting. It would be sort of like, in some ways, a very big step for the Catholic Church to have a pope of African descent.
Yeah.
But it would also, I think, in many ways, like, just because their social stances would become kind of extreme, it would make them seem even less relevant than they currently seem. Because they are not getting the greatest PR, and it's all about these gay priest scandals.
Yeah.
Like, the bad PR that is causing Pope Benedict to potentially have too much of a headache to continue to be pope is all about gays. So, like, maybe don't elect somebody
don't pick the one person.
The one person who's going to make it worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile,
I was just going to say, like, this whole, I mean, his, you know, being from Ghana, I mean, it's hard, but, like, I sort of grew up in the United Methodist Church, and, like, that's, like, all of the decisions of the United Methodist Church are sort of, like, made, like, on the world, you know, it's, like, the United Methodist world something, whatever, and it's sort of, like, you know, Africa is sort of, like, always, because there's a lot of Methodists there, like, screwing over the whole entire conference.
Shit.
Because, I mean, the Methodist Church here is fairly progressive.
Right.
And I think, to a certain degree, even now, the Catholic Church in America is sort of progressive,
more
too.
Progressive,
I mean, I know that they're taking their orders from the Vatican, but, I mean, like, I think that in so many of these churches, the ruling elite of the church are so far behind their actual congregants.
Yeah.
And I think that if the Vatican could actually see that, they would not elect this person as pope. But I think that they're just so far removed from the actual people who are going and worshiping as a part of their religion. I mean, I just don't think Catholics in most everywhere in the world would not want this person as pope. But it's, you know, however many cardinals, the college of cardinals that are going to pick him. But the people who are picking him don't know what anybody thinks.
Well, this is, and Catholicism is not a democracy.
I know it's not,
Catholicism.
But this is also why they're turning into irrelevancy right now, too.
This is
when you have hundreds and, you know, millions of people who say that they're Catholic, but you have people electing a pope who
doesn't listen
to that. It's, you know, this is why churches are dying.
One of the reasons I also think that the sort of like the way that many types of Christian faiths, but especially Catholicism, sort of internationalized, ends up, this is not the first time that Catholicism has, or that Catholics have done something that has caused some sort of major rift. It wouldn't be the first time,
no,
you know,
it would not.
Their history is filled with that sort of thing.
Yes.
But this is one of the things that ends up happening is that they elect some sort of leadership that doesn't really speak to the needs of whatever sort of like converts they've picked up internationally over the years, because there really isn't anything about the Catholic Church in Africa that resembles the Catholic Church in the U.S.
True.
It's a different church
because it's based
in a different cultural context.
Exactly.
And the same thing is true for Methodists. Like, there's no way that you wouldn't go to a Methodist church in Africa and be like, I'm home. Like,
no.
You'd be like, what is this church? I've never been to a church.
Well, you wouldn't
like
even
this.
Really do it in the South. I mean, it's always whatever the cultural context is, sort of where you are.
So, you know, maybe like some Protestant religions, because they were sort of based in splitting off from churches anyway, are able to survive that. The Catholic Church is so centrally organized and so sort of like idol driven that it's going to at some point either figure itself out or fade into irrelevancy, but it's not going to be able to control that. It's just going to happen. It's
going to
happen
right.
without it.
Yeah.
It's a political organization, and it's a political organization that's run by a king. It's a monarchy. It's like the last monarchy. So
it is.
You know, they have a country and everything.
Yeah,
it's a country that no one lives in. It's a fake country
that
you don't need a passport to go to. You can just wander in.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, what are they going to do? They're in the middle of Rome. They're just going to ask you for a passport?
Yeah.
A bunch of Romans are going to be heading to church, and they're going to be like, stop for a moment. Let's see your Italian passport.
Could you get a Vatican passport stamp?
I think they have Vatican passports.
Oh, they do?
I know. I don't know if they have stamps. The Vatican people have Vatican passports, I think. I think you probably can just travel wherever with a Vatican passport.
Yeah.
I don't know. In any case, in other gay news...
We have a lot of
gay news. There's
a lot of gay news this week.
Yes.
Yay.
Yay. Well, this is, I think, what we end up leaning on when there's not real news in the week.
There's always gay news. I can always muster up some gay news.
You can always find a story about gay.
Check the old Facebook news feed and see what's going on.
This is actually, though, a story that I found online just because it was a big headline. Which is that the AP decided this week that it was going to officially start referring to same-sex spouses as husbands and wives.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a cultural win.
Yeah, no, it is. And I mean, you should. I don't know what else to call them.
Well, I don't know what they've been doing this whole time.
I don't either.
Like, I guess they've been saying, like,
partners, probably.
That feels so antiquated, though.
It does.
It feels like something you might refer to somebody in the 70s as having
been. Yeah, but I mean, once you're getting married, it's sort of like, that's what you would say.
Like, what else are you going to...
Yeah.
Nobody knows. Mm-hmm. But in any case, so that's happening. And then there's also some early indications that Obama might be thinking about some sort of national gay marriage.
Yeah, I was surprised to read this, actually.
Yeah.
But there was a legal brief from the Justice Department filed with the Supreme Court on Friday asking that the justices strike down a key part of the Defense of Marriage Act, which a lot of people are thinking that is, you know...
It's sort of an early indicator that they're thinking about...
Right. So it basically, what it does is it like formally urges the court to declare unconstitutional parts of the Defense of Marriage law that bars recognition of same-sex marriages by federal government for income tax purposes, employee benefits, immigration.
Basically, a lot of the things that have been happening at the state level where people have been able to recognize, you know, where same-sex marriages have been able to receive a lot of the same treatment, or even civil unions have started receiving a lot of the same legal treatment as straight couples. He's basically trying to strike down the parts of the Defense of Marriage Act that ban gay couples from having that happen at the federal level.
Right.
So, and as I think an early sign that he's, and maybe this won't go anywhere further, but it's a sign that they are thinking about sort of like the broad national picture, not necessarily in terms of creating like a law that specifically protects same-sex couples, but in terms of knocking down some of the barriers to same-sex couples being treated like regular people.
Right. Well, and there are a lot of people who think that this is a sign that the administration has to decide this week whether they are going to sign on to the case against California's Proposition 8, which is going to be tried in front of the Supreme Court later this year.
Right.
So, there are people who sort of think that this brief that was put in on Friday
is sort of prepping for that.
Is a sign that the administration is going to, you know, sign on against that, which would be pretty huge.
The Prop 8 case already is sort of blowing my mind. Like, it just keeps going.
Oh, I know.
It never ends.
That was in 2008, and that's been sort of like in
just rolling around the courts for years. Mm-hmm. And it gets struck down, and then it gets upheld, and it gets struck down, and it gets upheld.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I think California is probably on its way to just striking it down anyway.
If we got this on our next ballot,
I don't think that it would happen. We would strike it down.
We would strike down Prop 8, and
Actively passed a law banning something, we have to actively take it down. We can't just like passively do it. It can't be like a law that, you know, where not enough people vote for it. It has to be a law where everyone votes to strike down a law that we've already voted to uphold.
And then it would be more confusing.
The jungle primary, you never know.
But because the first time that we had to vote on Proposition 8 was confusing anyway, because you had to vote
to vote yes,
and now we'd have to strike it down, and that would just be like a real, I don't even know if I would know what to vote at that point.
Whole thing was designed to be that confusing.
I know, exactly. Those Mormons, man.
They're sneaky.
They knew what they were doing.
They're very organized.
Yeah, they are. And rich.
And rich, yeah. Exactly. In any case, in not so great news for gays, the Republicans did manage to strip the LGBT and the Native American provisions from the Violence Against Women Act, which is that's what's been holding it up all this time, and that's why Rubio voted against it and blah, blah, blah. But, this is what I was saying to Brent earlier. I was like, I get, from a Republican standpoint, why it's hard to make the parallel between gay rights and, rights for minorities. I get how that's a different thing. I don't get how they can sort of, think that it's okay to, discriminate against one group of people and not another.
Yeah.
But I get why they have a hard time making that parallel.
Yeah.
Because one is about sexual orientation and one is about the color of your skin. And they don't quite see those things as the same.
Right.
Fine. I don't get why Native Americans had to be tossed out of this bill, though. If there's one group of people that all Americans can agree we've totally fucked over in every way and deserve every ounce of help that we can provide.
I agree.
Would be Native Americans.
Because I think the sticking point that they have with the Native Americans is something to do with, because Native Americans are able to, try things, in their own tribal courts. And so I think that they think that there's some sort of constitutionality issue here. But to your point, who really cares?
No. Who cares?
Even if there is a constitutional problem, it's just sort of like, can we please just include them in the Violence Against Women Act, for God's sake? I mean,
first of all,
whether they have their own tribal courts?
Just historically, we owe everything that we can give to them. Also because they have really high rates of domestic violence in the Native American community.
Well, that's why they
really high rates of alcoholism. That's why they got a special mention in the bill.
I was going to say, that's why the Democrats put them in this bill in the first place, is because they're high risk.
Yeah.
So to remove them is just sort of mind-boggling.
And it doesn't follow in line with, the ban, them not wanting money to go to LGBT shelters and whatever, that sort of follows in line with their evil plans anyway.
Right.
The Native American thing doesn't need to be a package deal with gays, but I don't understand why that became a sticking point at all. It just blows my mind. Makes them sort of evil to a degree that sort of surpasses my expectations.
I know, right?
It just sort of doesn't,
Well, the Republicans don't care about gays.
But it gives gays a good opportunity to sort of make a broad case.
That's true, it does.
Because I think that is one of the issues with arguing about something that is just about including gays or not including gays, with the Defense of Marriage Act, it's hard to make a broad case with gays because it's not exactly the same situation as the color of your skin.
Sure.
It's not something that you can just sort of outwardly not help and it's visible to everyone.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And this is sort of this is just broad annoyingness.
yes,
this is just craziness.
Right.
This is bonkers.
Yeah.
So in any case, that's a thing. That's happening. The Violence Against Women Act is sort of the symbol of everything that's gone wrong.
I know.
In the last few years.
Yeah. Bobby Jindal was on, what was he on? Meet the Press this morning?
Yeah, he was talking all over Meet the Press.
Yeah, this was a curious interview because we're going to get to a story in a little bit about where he said
jumped
something
really far left.
Went really progressive sort of on some gun rights issues, basically. But sort
in the same interview,
minutes later or before, I don't know the order of these statements.
Right.
He basically was just sort of like, well, I believe in the traditional definition of marriage, and we don't really need the gay vote to win these next elections, so we don't really care.
John Huntsman had made a comment, and has been making this comment, that, like, the Republican Party can't keep alienating gays the way that it does, because that is sort of, like, not only a group that has received a certain amount of broad acceptance, and so it's just, like, alienating everyone. Yeah. It's not just alienating gays to alienate gays, because you alienate everyone who likes gays.
Yeah.
But it also is not necessarily in line with their actual interests.
Right.
It's not in line with their economic interests. There are gay Republicans who probably don't vote Republican very often anymore because of all the sort of, like, the targeted vitriol that's come out of the party.
Well, they wouldn't even let Geo Proud into CPAC.
Yeah,
even
following
that story. Yeah, they're like, the people who are actually voting for them,
they
won't even
including.
Let in.
No, and this has been a long time problem with log cabin Republicans getting left out of all sorts of GOP events, and like they're just, and Brent and I personally know a bunch of obnoxiously rich gays who probably think they should be voting Republican and are not because of issues because of lifestyle and social issues like this. Yeah. So I think Huntsman has a good point.
Yeah. Well, and his point was not even, I mean, he was speaking specifically about gay people, but I think his larger
point was
we can't build a larger coalition, you know, to deal with some of these, like, you know, the economy and things like that. If we keep sort of like
alienating, you know, huge segments of the population.
Of right. Yeah, exactly.
So Bobby Jindal, in responding to that, was sort of like,
he's okay with,
we don't need him
alienating.
Yeah.
Large.
He thinks it's probably
population.
A good plan.
It's fine. Well, and I remember we did a story, and I think it was even from the New York Times, that we pulled it from not long after the election, that, like, in exit polling, like, something like 10 or 12% of the people who voted in this last election said that they were that they were LGBT.
Yeah.
Remember? And
no,
that, and that was, and
it's,
and,
a,
the,
and it's also going to be a growing sector of the population, because it's not really about, it's about how many people identify as LGBT.
Yeah.
And the more sort of, like, acceptable that becomes socially in small towns, you know, like, because it's one thing to have a large voting, you know, to have the voting demographic of Chelsea has a lot of LGBT people too. That's not a surprise. But when you start seeing national trends where it's growing, it's because it's becoming socially acceptable. It's not because the gays aren't there.
Right.
And they're going to, it's going to keep becoming more socially acceptable, and there's going to keep being larger swaths of the population that identify that way.
I have a feeling Bobby Jindal, and this is not in, I'm not trying to defend Bobby Jindal, but I think that there are a lot of people in the Republican Party who don't realize how many gays are out there.
No, I think that's probably, like, I think that's probably by virtue of being Republicans, they just don't hang out in the kind of circles where they find this information out.
I think if you showed Bobby Jindal those exit polls that had how many people were identifying as LGBT, his jaw would probably hit the floor, and he would probably take this back.
But this is also, this is about identity politics more than it is about who is actually LGBT in the country. Like, there is not a hard and fast number of LGBT people in the country.
Right.
There is an evolving number of people that identify a certain way. And they're basically, like, putting this sort of hatred out there. And it's like, they're not realizing that the number of people that are accepting it is sort of growing exponentially.
Yeah.
Like, the number of people who are offended by it just grows every year. It doesn't stay like a static number. It's not like 10% of the population is gay and that's how it is.
Yeah.
It's that a growing number of people are just sort of whatever.
Yeah.
Just sleeping with whoever, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, but, like, It's sort of like a dumb strategy, because it's not a static number of people that they're offending.
Yeah.
And if they talk to their children, they would find that it's everybody. That's what's also, these people all have 500 kids.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we were talking during the election cycle about how, like, everyone in the Republican primary had, like, at least 5 children. Like, it was a maddening number of children that everyone had. None of their kids go to school in the world.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause their kids are going to grow up in a world where it's not cool to hate gays. And their kids are going to have gay friends, because their friends are going to be thinking it's okay to be gay, because it's going to be socially acceptable at that point.
Yeah.
And they're going to suddenly find themselves in a world where, like, 50% of the population thinks they're LGBT just because they identify that way.
Well, and that's the thing that I think about. I mean, I think about my, you know, my cousin who lives at 29 Palms. She was a Marine who has Sabrina. I know they're both Republicans. I know for a fact they're both Republicans.
Yeah.
Like, she, you know, her oldest daughter is 13 or 14, and she talks about her gay friends.
Yeah.
Like, her favorite show is Glee. I mean, she may very well grow up and be a Republican, but I know that she's not going to hate gays.
No, exactly.
And
the Republican Party's not doing themselves favors if they're new, you know, if they're planning to keep being relevant.
Yeah.
Young people are okay with gays, so
yeah.
They're not going to find a way to sort of like bridge that gap. It's not like she's going to start hating gays. No. She's just going to have to either be uncomfortable with that, or she's going to have to stop voting for them.
Right. So anyway,
that's not those aren't good odds for them.
No. Our last gay story of the week is that, guess what?
Oh, you might not have known this.
No. Barack Obama is gay.
Who knew?
People. Did you know that?
Because certainly had not heard.
We didn't know.
Which is surprising, because we live in a world where everyone thinks everyone is gay.
Right. But Scott Lively, who is a crazy person.
Right.
But he is sort of like a famous, you know,
pastor, sociopath.
Sociopath, exactly. Who is sort of most famous for his support of Uganda's, you know, kill the gay bill. Or kill the gays bill.
Was blogging a little for the Defend the Family organization.
Has proof. He's got proof.
Proof.
That President Obama is gay. And it is, the headline was, Obama vacations with Reggie Love and not Michelle Obama. And then like, I know. Yeah, exactly. And then he sort of like goes, his proof is that like, well, I mean, there's,
it's not proof.
It's not proof. No. This would not hold up in a court of law in any way, shape, or form.
It is, what is it? It's that Obama had his solo vacation.
Yes.
And there, he said that he, that Air Force One was wheels down at Andrews Airport at 7:45 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then he came back to have a 10-minute off-the-record talk at the pool at the end of the flight with, and Reggie Love, like, departed at, like, 7:55. Like, it was that there was a 10-minute overlap between Reggie Love and Barack Obama.
Right.
Like, at Andrews, or at, you know, at Andrews Air Force Base, I guess.
So the implication is that
they had a 10-minute talk.
Yes.
And exactly. So we have proof that they're dating because they talked for 10 minutes. Exactly. Potentially, we think maybe because they were overlapping for 10 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. But Scott Lively, this is not, I mean, obviously, we already mentioned the Kill the Gays bill.
Right.
But
he's not a reputable source.
He's not a reputable source, but he has also sort of like, he's been riding this Obama gay rumor for a while, which I didn't realize. But basically, he also claims that if you talk to anybody who's been in the Chicago gay bar scene for over 25 years, then they would, like, tell you stories about, like, him, like, in specific bars that he went to on certain days and that...
And was once married to a man, apparently.
He was married to his old
college roommate. Back at a time when you couldn't be married to a man.
Right, so that's
curious. But he was curious. He was doing it.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, he's really pro-gay marriage, so he probably just felt like he was just going to do it.
That's right.
He was going to go out on
and he was a constitutional law professor. He knew his rights.
I wonder if Jeremiah Wright married them.
Probably.
Probably.
That seems most likely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He probably...
And then, but
a long
he
track
also,
record of marrying gays.
But he also has some other theories outside of Obama being gay that are sort of questionable.
Right.
And when I mean sort of questionable, I mean...
100% questionable.
Basically, he says that biblical gay weddings were what led to the flood.
Yes, you might not have known about that.
The flood of Noah's
time.
It's because there were gay weddings going on in the Bible.
Noah's Ark was only necessary because of gays.
Gay weddings.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And also, the gays and not Hitler were responsible for the Holocaust.
You might not have heard that either. Interestingly, I just read a very long, very long book. Literally a 1,000-page book.
Yeah.
That had no paragraphs in it. Called The Kindly Ones. It was for work. That was about a Nazi officer who was secretly gay.
Oh.
Who was walking around
blaming
Jews and gays for the Holocaust by saying that they had made it necessary.
Oh, I see.
He didn't seem to identify himself as part of the problem. It was a very confusing, very long book about what was going on. But apparently Nazis also felt that gays were responsible for the Holocaust. It's interesting how gays and Jews can get blamed for almost anything.
They really can.
Causing the Holocaust, not causing the Holocaust, being victims and the cause of the Holocaust.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a real clusterfuck of blame going on there.
Yeah.
They're sort of like the ultimate world scapegoats. They can be scapegoated for really anything.
Uh-huh.
In any case, back to Bobby Jindal.
As we
teased earlier, Bobby Jindal now believes in universal background checks. Because that is what will make the Republican Party relevant to younger voters.
Yeah.
They can still hate gays.
Right.
But thank God they'll have some common sense gun policy. I mean, he said this in the most sort of like roundabout way that he possibly could. He was like, we'll propose legislation to provide more of that legislation.
We're going to pass more a law saying that it's okay to pass a
legislation
to another law. Yeah.
That says that it's okay to provide background checks into the system because we'll just fix the current background system because then people with mental illness won't get guns. But he said sort of like all of these sentences that sort of added up to him wanting more background checks.
Uh-huh.
But like couldn't actually say the word universal background check.
He wasn't, well, he
wasn't going
to
go there.
Didn't intend to do that ever. No. And he still won't probably no. ever. But
I mean, he's the one who called their party the stupid party, though.
Yeah, but he also was performing college exorcisms.
That's true.
So
he can't be trusted.
He's also not a real... He and Scott Lively are both not reliable
equally
sources.
Unreliable sources okay. on everything.
So, anyway.
Meanwhile, other sort of, like, Republican state news.
Weird?
Not weird.
No, but...
I know that we had reported before that Florida was not going to agree to the Medicaid expansion right. that is under Obamacare. We brought you news that Arizona was going to do it.
I was just
going to
say
New Mexico
weird
was
going to
do it.
Yes.
That Nevada is going to do it.
Yeah.
But Florida had, before, Rick Scott had been acting like he was not going to accept this,
yeah.
which we thought was crazy. Because if there's one state where they need the federal government to be expanding Medicaid for them, it's Florida.
Florida.
Florida only has old people and poor people. It doesn't have any other people in it.
No.
So, like, get your act together. Anyway, Rick Scott finally did
get
his act
like,
together.
And they have, what is it? Don't they have like the fourth highest or something amount
yes.
of people who don't
they
have
20% of
people.
The population is uninsured.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's tied for the fourth worst after Texas, Nevada, and New Mexico.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, it's, of those states, only Texas hasn't
yeah.
accepted the Medicaid expansion. And that's, let's face it, because Rick Scott is a complete idiot.
Rick Perry
is a complete idiot.
Right.
Rick Scott...
Also
he's also named Rick.
Idiot,
also a complete idiot.
He is, yeah.
But he decided to accept the money.
Yeah.
Because
well,
it's free money from the
well,
federal
see, that's
government.
The thing that I don't get about this is that, like, once you're turning down money that is already been allocated for you to have,
yeah.
that would directly, positively affect the people in your state, just, and you're doing that, and you're doing that only to make a political point, like, that's enough that you should really just, you should be immediately kicked out of office. Like,
yeah.
people, the people who in Texas who are uninsured should literally just go and pull Rick Perry out of the state house and just
and
throttle him.
If 20%
no,
of the population of Texas is uninsured, that's millions of people.
They could have his head on a
yeah.
stake.
They could
and they should.
Pull a French, they could have a French revolution.
In Texas.
A freedom
Texas
revolution.
Style. I'm sure
freedom
enough
revolution
of,
to Texas.
I'm sure enough of them are armed.
Exactly. Yeah, they could start their own militia.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is why Arizona.
All right. Once Jan Brewer
once
starts
Jan
realizing
Brewer is doing this shit,
it's a good idea, then if you are not also
on the train, like stop yourself.
Right.
Yeah. No, I mean this is and this I you know I think Jan Brewer for me at least was sort of like the turning point because
totally.
I you know I think of Susana Martinez as like relatively reasonable as a person, like she's not a crazy person. Jan Brewer is an actual crazy person, so
yeah.
when she flipped sides, I was like, someone has
yeah.
finally explained that, like, first of all, for 3 years, the federal government pays for 100% of this program.
Yeah.
So this Medicaid expansion, it goes to anyone who makes up to 133%
of the
federal
poverty
level.
Right.
That means you have to make under
$15,000
a year.
$15,000
so, like, a year. Sorry. Like, why not help those people? Like, let's do it.
I agree.
Let's bump that number up. Because if you're making $25,000 a year, you're not living the high life, and you can't afford health
you
insurance.
You can't afford
so,
health insurance.
I know. Whatever. But in any case, once we're talking about a program that the federal government is paying 100% of for 3 years, and then going to pay 90% of for the rest of your time
yeah.
having the program, like, why not?
Get on board.
Get on board. Do
yeah.
it. That's free money.
Yep.
Free money that will help residents of your painfully stupid state.
Well, I think, you know, at least in Rick Scott's case, he has become fairly unpopular of late.
Yeah.
His approval rating is not
no, and
great.
This is the kind of
and he has
why.
He has a re-election coming
yeah,
up,
he's
and I think
fix his
that.
Shit.
But once you realize that you should do something like this to be re-elected, like then you should be thinking, oh well, maybe that's just like
a good idea. If people like it, like maybe that's a thing that will always get me re-elected.
Right.
Maybe I can be re-elected for
right.
all time if I do good things for people.
Right. Exactly.
Meanwhile.
Oh, Mike Huckabee is just an...
Speaking of healthcare.
Mean, yeah. I don't...
We don't have the words for this. Mike Huckabee basically made a comment where he compared healthcare for pre-existing conditions, which is part of the new Affordable Care Act
yeah.
package, to giving insurance for burnt down houses or totaled cars. What he doesn't realize is that being alive is a pre-existing condition.
Exactly.
Like, I had actually written a Huffington Post piece about this a few years ago.
Yeah.
That was about how people with pre-existing conditions had become sort of like these scapegoats. Like, they had become essentially an oppressed minority. And they are not they're a majority.
Of course. Yeah.
But every person who's taken their first breath has a pre-existing condition. There are stories of babies getting denied healthcare because they were born obese.
Yes.
Fat babies can't get healthcare.
Yeah.
Like, babies whose mothers had health conditions can't get healthcare because of their mother. Like, you can't escape having a pre-existing condition.
No.
Because if you have taken a breath, you've already done something to fuck up everything.
Yeah.
So, that's a crazy thing to say anyway.
Yeah.
But also, it's sort of like, I mean, and this drives me crazy when people act like health insurance is equivalent in some way to other forms of insurance.
No, it's not.
Which is not the case. Because everyone has health. Or not health. Everyone has to take care of their health, though. Not everyone has a car. Not everyone has a house.
But everyone who has a car has to have insurance.
Exactly.
So if you have life,
right, you should have insurance.
You should have insurance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's something that is so universal and affects us sort of like at the most basic level that it's crazy to make a comparison that we can't take on people with pre-existing conditions. We're just going to let them die?
Well, yeah.
That's what he thinks.
That's what he thinks. That's what the Republican...
How is that...
We heard that theory cheered at a Republican debate
also,
for president.
How is taking on people with pre-existing conditions different than covering people who develop health problems? At a certain point, you're just covering sick people. Like, should we be dropping people if they're not healthy from insurance? Because one thing that healthy people don't need is health insurance.
Yeah.
Sick people need health insurance. Unfortunately, all healthy people eventually become sick, and that's why they need health insurance.
Right.
But, like, people who are just healthy, if they're going to get dropped from their insurance as soon as they're sick, they don't need health insurance.
Oh, well, right,
you're not
exactly
insuring anything at that point.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
But in any case.
That's why it's always annoying when the healthcare companies don't want you to actually get any care when you're sick.
Because why else are you paying into it? I had a friend who did AmeriCorps, who had a back problem, who got kicked, because of that she was out of work for a while, and they tried to kick her off of her health insurance, claiming that it was just a benefit so they could terminate it when they terminated her contract with them. Even though she was already like, first of all, she was still under contract with them, but second of all, she had been injured like while she was working for them and was getting care for an injury that she had sustained while she had insurance through them.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like, why did I agree to, like, why would I take a job that was going to give me insurance if it was going to get terminated the moment that I got sick?
Right.
Like, why would I have accepted, why wouldn't I have just gotten a job that paid money, like, paid more money and bought the insurance myself? But, like, it was just sort of like, and it was a government program, so I found it infuriating. But it was it was crazy logic. It was you don't terminate someone from healthcare once they're already sick.
Yeah.
At that point, you're stuck with them. Sorry. And everyone gets sick at some point. So sorry about that too.
Yeah.
Like, Mike Huckabee would like to tell us that he's never had to call upon any of the, you know, health insurance money that he probably spends every month.
Let me tell you, Mike Huckabee has to have a pre-existing condition because
it's stupidity.
It's stupidity. And it's also obesity.
Obesity.
Lest we forget.
Teddy bear looks and stupidity.
I mean, he's not obese anymore, but I guarantee you that he had cholesterol problems at some point in his life.
Yeah.
And probably needed health insurance to pay for some drugs that he was on.
Exactly. He's probably on the same heart medication that every person in America is on.
Because at one point, Mike Huckabee weighed a metric ton.
Exactly.
He was Chris Christie style fat. There's that famous photo of his family where they, like, you know, I don't even want to get into it because it's upsetting.
It's upsetting. In any case.
There's a photo of him and his family. And they're all really fat.
Yeah.
And that's
That's one of the things you can get denied healthcare for.
Yeah.
So.
There it is.
Welcome to America.
Yeah.
In any case.
I'm going to start comparing Mike Huckabee to a burned down house. Or a total car. Ass hat. Okay. All right. Oh. Ted Cruz is. This is one of the better stories of the week.
Yeah.
Because we've sort of like known that he's crazy.
He's never proven himself to not be crazy.
He's known for being crazy, but he really has sort of like taken it to a level that
went
off
the deep end.
A lot of people this week were comparing him to McCarthy.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, some people, I feel like saying McCarthyism or comparing people to McCarthy.
We're talking about Joseph McCarthy as in the anti-communist crusader.
Exactly.
Has a bad rap for all of eternity for being a terrible,
I feel
blacklisting, scary person.
I feel like McCarthyism is a sort of term that, you know, gets used every once in
gets
a while.
Gets thrown around.
When someone...
I often use it at times that it's not necessarily appropriate.
This time it's actually about spot on. Appropriate. Because what Ted Cruz is now doing in his sort of attempt to take down Chuck Hagel is truly...
He's making up rumors.
Making things up. And he's... But he's doing it... there was a really great segment where... this week with that Rachel Maddow did on the subject, basically, where she was sort of like playing things that, you know, Joseph McCarthy had said, where he was like, there are 137 known, you know, like where he would make up these like facts that were like very specific facts. And like she played a speech of his where he was like, in my hand, I am holding a list of like, which right. obviously he wasn't because he's making
well,
these, he was
this
making
was
up
what,
such...
This is why he liked those lists. This is why he was blacklisting people. It was so that he would have specifics, and they were right. always based on nothing. It was always just like right. random feelings right. people were having about people.
Yeah,
just, you know, weird suspicions that were all very like paranoid and right. crazy.
But it's just sort of like it's you know somebody like that guy that we were talking about earlier who was saying Obama is gay. Like, he's just sort of like a crazy, like, nutbag, and it's right. like, he's gonna say something like that, and nobody has to listen to him. Ted Cruz is a United States senator who is basically requesting, like, you know, he's...
Well, this, what happened with Hagel recently is he insinuated that he had been collecting speaking fees from North Korea.
Based on nothing.
Which is...
Basically, there was, like, some sort of, like, deposit that, like, is sort of, like, known, like, for $200,000 or something that,
right.
like, was deposited in Chuck Hagel's checking. And he was like, we need to make sure that that wasn't a payment from North Korea.
Do we need to make that sure?
This is something...
I wasn't thinking about it.
This is something that Ted Cruz absolutely just made up out of the blue and is forcing someone to then prove that it's right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Chuck Hagel's going to be like, well, I can't prove that it's wrong because how would I have proof that I didn't get a check
right.
from North Korea?
Well, you can't prove that you didn't do something. You can only prove that you did stuff.
Right.
It's impossible to prove. And
yeah.
this is the kind of logic that McCarthy used.
Yeah.
This is why he was so famously annoying.
Yeah.
But, like, this is sort of, like, why these kinds of comments are, like, extra annoying because they're oddly specific. But
yes.
it's impossible to prove that you did
right.
not do something. You can
yeah.
only prove that you did something.
Yeah.
It's impossible to prove that you're not a communist. You can only prove that you are a Democrat. You can't, you know, prove
yeah.
that you didn't go skiing last weekend. You can only prove that you did go skiing last weekend. Like, it's, that logic
yeah.
is very tricky and it's sneaky
yeah,
because
it's very sneaky.
It sounds
yeah.
logical.
Yeah.
It sounds like he should be able to show us that it wasn't from North Korea. But, like, where would you even get the proof that something wasn't from
yeah.
North Korea? It's all around us. Nothing we have is from North Korea. The proof is just that we're in America where nothing is from North Korea. Like, isn't that enough?
Oh, God.
Meanwhile, he also said over the 4th of July weekend, he was just sort of like a couple years
yeah.
ago, that he, oh yeah, it was 2.5 years ago. He was speaking in Austin, Texas, in some 4th of July speech. And he said that Harvard Law School, where he went,
yes.
was harboring dozens of communists on its faculty.
Yeah.
They,
mm-hmm.
they were reached for comment.
No,
and
he said a dozen.
A dozen.
See, that's, again, sort of like he said 12.
Okay, he said 12
as if he could have rattled off the names of 12 specific
well,
people.
This
that were
article
communists.
Was from the New Yorker, and they asked a faculty member at Harvard Law
who was like,
to name 12 people who were communists, and he couldn't.
Well, no. Obviously.
But I mean, like, they were like, do you have 12 communists? And he was like, I can't think of 12
right.
even, like, leftists on our, like, I
yeah.
can't think of 12 anyone's.
Yeah.
But... The, you know, the sort of, like, odd thing about this, I mean, it's very dated, the idea of going after people for being communists, specifically,
yeah.
not for being leftists, not for being activists, not
yeah.
for any of that, for being communists.
Yeah.
And it's funny that he went to North Korea, because they're really running out of countries to pull this with.
No.
You know, we're allies now with Vietnam. We, you know, he can maybe say Cuba, but, like, people are sort of over it. And everyone knows they're sort of modernizing.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to say Russia, because they're not communists anymore.
Yeah.
China owns us, so he can't say China, because everyone's doing business with China. Like, North Korea is all that he had to go with, and that sounded so bonkers and crazy.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I watched a documentary about gymnasts in North Korea that I've been talking about nonstop, because I'm obsessed
really
with it.
Really been into it.
It's fascinating. Well, because you forget in a place like North Korea, which you, like, we literally have no information about what's going on there. Like, everyone's, you know, we hear that they have concentration camps. That sounds terrible.
Yep.
But I've often thought to myself, like, what does someone who just, like, lives in the capital... like, do every day.
Yeah.
Are they allowed to smile? Like, do they ride a train to work?
Yep.
I know that they have that fancy train station that they show everyone when you go to North Korea, but, like, I don't know whether it works.
Right.
Like, I don't know what's going on in there.
Yeah.
Like, do they have elevators? Like, there's so many questions that you have about North Korea. This documentary was about two young gymnasts in North Korea. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating not only because it covers, like, it says it's about two rhythmic gymnastics. It fails to mention that it's about, it's not, like, internationally competitive rhythmic gymnastics.
Yeah.
It's two girls who perform in the mass games in North Korea, which is just, like, their big spectacle games.
Yeah.
Like, remember how when China did the Olympics, they had, like, the craziest opening ceremony of all time?
Genius.
And made Britain and every other country in Europe that's ever tried to do it look a little sad. Especially after that British opening ceremony. That was crazy. But North Korea could put all of those people to all sorts of shame. And they're just putting on these games for themselves. They're not
right,
even
exactly.
games. It's just a performance that they do for each other, basically. And they, like, all participate in it, and then they all go watch it. And it's like school children or, like...
Yeah.
You know, they do these, like, big murals where you, like, have big cards that you're holding up in the stadium
sure.
and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't even know who's going to see these things, because, like, who would be? Everyone in Pyongyang is in the game.
Oh. Well, I was going to say, people probably have to go.
Well, of course they have to go, but I don't know who those people would be.
Yeah.
It's like when you see a parade in North Korea, you're like, is anyone watching this parade? It seems like this parade, like, every person in Pyongyang is probably in this parade. And they all had to practice, but, like, they're all really good at, like, doing mass events like this. Anyway.
Well, communists are.
Communists are. Well, this specific type of communist, like, these types of, like, Stalinist communists
sure.
are. Like, I wouldn't trust... Cuba's really good with certain things. They can both load and exit a stadium very fast.
Mm.
I've been to rallies in Cuba.
I would love that.
Well, it's
awesome.
I wish
we had more of that.
It's awesome. I've been to rallies in Cuba. Like, I was there once for their sort of, like, version of Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to this rally where, like, some bigwig from the Cuban military or somebody was speaking
sure.
or whatever. They all... loaded in by CDR, which is, like, their block group or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I was literally standing there for maybe 5 minutes. It was thousands of people. I was in the front of the crowd. They put the Americans in the front of the crowd so they could probably take a photo of us and show them we're there. I don't know. I turned around 5 minutes later, and it was empty. I didn't even hear them leave. I don't know where everyone went. It was crazy. Every time I've ever been to, like, a big event in Cuba, it's been, like, organized in a way that Cubans don't immediately give you the impression that they're capable of.
Yeah.
Because they're not, they're like Americans. They're sort of all over the place, you know?
Yeah.
But in any case, in North Korea, everything is highly organized. But they do. They ride the train to work. And they take the bus. And they have umbrellas.
The train works.
The train sometimes works. Apparently it doesn't work all the time. They have umbrellas. They have rain boots that they wear. They sometimes wear uniforms to school. And sometimes they have other clothes that they wear.
Oh my.
There seem to be a lot of sport jumpsuits that are going on there that... really popular. I'm not sure whether that was just because I was...
Sportswear.
Sportswear. Real popular.
Interesting.
A lot of people seem to know how to play the guitar there.
Oh.
And the accordion's really popular.
What?
Yeah. Hilarious. They
love
showed
that.
Some footage from these girls' history class.
Oh.
They call the U.S. Army the U.S. Army of Aggression.
Well, that's not wrong.
And it is just, like, bonkers, the history that they're learning. Like, no wonder they're all sitting around, sitting in... You know, and this is in the capital where... they're not quite as oppressed as, you know, it's not oppressive, but they
sure.
have a better quality of life than they do out in the country. But this is, it was like crazy banana pants. Like they are under the impression that it is their personal life's goal and national life's goal to just like take down the U.S. That's all they talk about. And like, for example, these girls were like sitting in their house and the lights go out because they have power outages every once in a while,
sure.
like every developing country. And as the lights came back on, this girl's grandmother goes, "Damn Americans." As if Americans are causing the power outages. Like, it was crazy. It was fascinating, though.
Yeah.
I was fascinated. I spent all weekend Googling North Korean newsreel clips, because I was just sort of like, what else is going on there? I found out...
Do you remember on 30 Rock when What's-Her-Name
was kidnapped
like, in North Korea?
And
she had to do the
news
patch there? She was like, "The American credit rating has been downgraded to triple fart minus." Remember that?
Yes. It's sort of like that. That's actually going on. Well, I remember when I was in Vietnam, I went to this, like, Museum of the Revolution, and there were all of these, like, really hilarious Stalinist-looking, like, symbolic displays.
Uh-huh.
And I was going through with someone who was Vietnamese, and she was able to explain to me in detail, in a very consistent way with every other Vietnamese person in there, because we were, you know, I was there with a group of Americans, but we were there with a group of Vietnamese students, and I heard all of them explaining to their friends what was going on. Everyone had a very consistent story about what each symbolic display meant. They could all tell you the same, in the same words, the same revolutionary story. Like, it was, I imagine a lot of that's going on.
I have a feeling, too.
They visit a museum like that in the documentary that's set in North Korea. And the grandfather was like, yes, this display symbolizes when the army of U.S. aggression did blah, 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 and brutally attacked and murdered, blah, you know, like...
Right.
Anyway, I digress.
That was a
long digression.
We both digressed for a while, actually.
But
anyway,
in any case,
Ted Cruz, asshole.
McCarthy. Moving on, Soledad O'Brien leaving Starting Point and sort of CNN, sort of.
She's starting her own production company.
Yeah. Here's what I think. I think that they wanted her to be having the Today Show over there. And she was sort of like, no, I'd like to report the news. And they were like, well, let's argue about that. And we're going to also take away all your staff. Right.
Well, what we've learned since Jeff Zucker got to CNN is that they are no longer in the business of reporting the news.
No, they are sort of like the everyman's answer to Fox News.
Yes.
They're reporting the entertaining part of the news.
Right.
They're entertaining us with news-like programming.
Exactly.
And...
yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like the Velveeta of news, sort
exactly.
of, if you will.
It's cheese food. Uh-huh. It's the news. Yeah, exactly. It's the news equivalent of cheese food.
Yeah. Soledad O'Brien was doing too much serious reporting.
Right, and they probably hated her for it.
So they're replacing her
with Aaron Burnett,
Chris
probably.
Cuomo and, yeah, more than likely Aaron Burnett. And I don't like Aaron Burnett.
Nobody likes Aaron Burnett. That's why she didn't get the
she's
show.
She's a little dumb,
yes,
for one.
Correct.
And she's also a little sort of like vaguely conservative.
Yeah.
In ways that I just don't even think that she knows because I don't think that
she
knows.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
No.
She's not a knower.
In other news, things. Though, Soledad O'Brien is starting her own production company.
Which,
and will be providing content to CNN, but also everywhere else.
Hopefully it's
so
not that content will be provided
us.
By us.
Because we desperately want Soledad O'Brien
Soledad
to
O'Brien.
Take on our show.
If you're listening.
Contact us.
Which you're not.
No.
But we're going to try and make
but
you.
Mom, if you know Soledad O'Brien, you see Soledad O'Brien.
If anybody knows where Soledad O'Brien lives, or knows her personal email address,
feel free to send some of our material over. We'll be waiting for her call. We had heroes and then anti-hero news.
Right. Soledad O'Brien being hero.
Right. Hillary Clinton being our anti-hero. You might have noticed we posted our Hillary Clinton blog.
We're going to keep posting it.
We're going to keep posting it because it's never going to be not relevant.
We're going to keep posting it until she either does or doesn't become president at some point.
Exactly.
Like in the next, you know,
right.
lifetime. really. But we're going to
No, we're just going
to... It's timeless.
It's timeless.
That story.
But there was a story in Politico about how her just like presence in life is kind of like fucking with Andrew Cuomo's
It's ruining Andrew Cuomo's life.
Yeah. Because he wants to be running for president. He's doing a lot of things that he thinks will make him presidential, like
mm-hmm.
passing gay marriage in New York and
yep.
blah, blah, blah. First of all, he's starting to get less than positive media coverage because, and I've said this before, because he's a Republican.
Well, I remember that, yes.
But also, he's very sort of heavy-handed. And he's good at that, and the New York state legislature is a mess, so it sort of takes a heavy-handed
yep.
person to do that. But he's also maybe not seeming like the nicest guy all the time, so the press is sort of... waxing and waning,
yep.
we'll say. But also, Hillary Clinton is just, like, all up in his grill stealing his, you know, stardom.
Yeah.
Because every moment that she's not running, you know, every moment that she's not saying that she's not running for president is a moment where no one's talking about anything but her being president.
Right. And you know what? Everybody is sort of, like, talking about how she's, like, freezing the field because, you know, like, everybody's mm-hmm. going to wait. I'm putting this out there right now, and I know that I'm only one voter, and one vote will not win you a Democratic primary. I would be willing to just ride the train of whoever announces first.
Right.
That is not
her. Not Hillary Clinton. Yeah.
Anybody.
Anybody. Any person.
If any politician...
If John Huntsman decides to
catches
run.
Wind of this right now, I will be your campaign manager. I will give you my money.
Right.
I will do any... If you are not Hillary Clinton and you declare tomorrow, I'm yours.
Right. We're on board. Yeah.
Because I fucking hate that.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
No, and it's... I mean, this is part of what we were saying, is her constantly talking, her sort of like, the constant talk about this is sort of freezing the field. It's making it difficult for other people to kind of distinguish themselves because no one's paying any attention.
Yeah.
I think ultimately her wave will ride out. You know, I found an article online this week from 2007 that had a headline that was basically like, Hillary Clinton is clearing the field for, you know, like it was basically an article about how she was so far ahead of everyone else in the primaries in 2007.
Yeah.
And that's a headline we've been seeing already, again, in
yeah.
2012 for a 2016 race.
Yeah.
Like, there is time for someone like Cuomo to pull ahead, but it's difficult for anyone to get their footing if all we're talking about is Hillary Clinton running for president. And she's not even busy doing anything else right now.
No.
Like, well, she's feeding the speculation nonstop because she quit her job and she's writing a book and she's on a speaking tour and she's doing everything that you do to prep to be president.
Yeah.
She looks too tired to be president.
Well,
she's looking exhausted. The Secretary of State gig really wiped her out. That's fine. But I don't necessarily need her to be president now. You already aged so much as president.
I know.
She's aged a lot as Secretary of State. At some point, she's going to run out of years.
Yeah.
In any case, my idea for Cuomo? Pass a single-payer health plan in New York State, you will be president. That's my prediction. You'll never do it, so we'll never find out if I'm right. But I think that if you could do something that dramatic, especially in an area that Hillary Clinton has failed so dramatically, because healthcare reform is her Achilles heel.
Yep.
And she tries to make it her strength because she tries to act like she's got all this information about it, but everyone knows she's incapable of getting anything done in healthcare reform.
Yeah.
If you pass a single-payer health plan in New York State, you will become the president. There, I said it. I like Moving that. On.
Oh.
This is the best part of the podcast, only an hour and 15 minutes in. This is everything.
This is, yeah, it really
There
is.
Are apparently a number of just, like, banana pants bills.
And this at actually the state sort level, of... This enters the banana pants portion of the podcast. I mean, yeah, we've had some funny stories already, but everything else that we are going to end with now is ridiculous.
Yeah, correct. But there's a lot of ridiculous news this week.
Uh-huh.
There have been a number of just, like, silly bills that are coming through state houses
right
at the moment.
A lot of them, and we're going to...
Like, an excessive number.
We're going to tell you about them.
We're going to tell you about them.
About all of them.
Because this is what's happening in America, folks. First of all, in Mississippi...
Oh, there you... Well,
this is the best one.
Mississippi know they know what's important.
Correct.
Down in Mississippi, ending abortion. You know they've got a lot of things that they're busy dealing with down there.
Ending abortion and banning human animal hybrids.
Yeah. Well, you can't have them.
No, they're tacking this on to a larger anti-abortion bill.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And this is from State Rep. William Tracy Arnold. Mm-hmm. You might have guessed he's a Republican.
No. Had no idea.
But he said. The truth of the matter is they're experimenting with some animal genes and infusion in some other countries, and we want to protect those embryos from that type of infusion and protect them. Mm-hmm. He also doesn't apparently give the greatest quotes. Mm-hmm. He said, after all, they're living beings, I believe. So basically, he's worried that we're going to start planting human embryos with animal hybrid genes and then maybe abort them too. Like, it's not clear...
Well, it's a concern.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an unfounded concern, but it's a concern nonetheless. Like, this is something that you have, like, a dream about one night that, like, a fucking centaur has, like, come to your door
your baby
or something.
With wolf and, genes.
And you need to pass legislation for it the next day. I mean, you have got to be kidding me.
Well, he's...
He's not.
Sadly, not kidding
He's
you.
He's not kidding but, at all. He's not kidding.
But moving on.
Oh, this is a good one, too. Arizona. if guide dogs weren't enough help
or
to you,
or weren't
a good enough
weren't
service
cowboy
animal.
Enough for you. Because this is Arizona. Right. This is the West.
Uh-huh. Well, luckily for you, if you're a resident of Arizona, miniature horses.
There's a lawmaker who wants to make it possible for you to use service miniature horses. That means that miniature horses could be used in any capacity that service dogs are currently used, including, like, going to the movies with you. Like, going to restaurants.
Taking you to the
airport. Taking you to the airport. Oh, my God. There is in Burbank an equestrian district where people are allowed to have horses and mysteriously just sort of like ride horses around.
Yeah.
And there is a family that has two miniature horses and they ride around in a horse and buggy pulled by two miniature horses. And I can only imagine that in Arizona, suddenly people would be doing that, but into restaurants. In any case,
I love that. Take them grocery shopping with you. There's so many things you could do with a miniature horse.
So true.
I want to ride my miniature horse around the grocery store.
Yeah. I don't know if you can ride a miniature horse, though, if you're not a child.
Can't you?
Well, no. I mean, I've often thought
are
you should be...
Are they too small? How miniature are miniature horses?
It's not like naturally occurring breed of horse.
Oh.
It's like a bred type of horse.
I see.
Now, they probably suffer from dwarfism. They probably have certain health defects that...
Now, would a miniature horse be allowed under this Mississippi ban on hybrid?
Could we create why can't I say the
centaur.
Word? Centaur, miniature horse, baby hybrid.
Maybe.
Something to think about.
I don't know
about.
What that'd be good for.
Well, servicing. And perhaps dogs could use it as a guide.
Montana. Montana has a couple. Well, one of them is not as hilarious. We're going to get to that later, but this one's
the hilarious crazy one. You might have wondered what happens after you hit a deer in the road to the very good meat that is left just wasted on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Montana, there is a bill that would like to change that. Republican Steve Lavin wants to make it possible for police to license residents to salvage road meat.
Oh, yes.
So with a permit, they could pick up game animals like deer and elk that have been hit by cars and are lying dead on the side of the road. They could also kill dying deer that have been hit by cars. Because, quote, there's a lot of good meat being wasted out there. The food shortages in Montana are really severe, as you might notice. And apparently they don't have... Well, if you get the meat yourself from roadkill, you know that it's not horse meat. At least you've got that scandal.
This is a thing that... Well, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I had a shirt that said Roadkill Cafe on it.
Well, there's a Roadkill Cafe in every town in America.
Right, exactly. And that was sort of like a big thing. And then there was also the... there's a roadkill, you know, everybody always thinks it's funny that there's, like, roadkill cookbooks and things like that or whatever, but I didn't think that we would need any sort of, like, state legislation
to specifically allow you to eat roadkill?
Right.
Are they going hungry right now in Montana?
Can you imagine going to apply for the permit needed for that? Like, just going into your local probably like the hunting and fishing office
Bureau
or something. I'm going to need that permit.
Right. I saw a deer on my way home yesterday, and I am hungry.
It's probably still there.
It's probably still there, and that's some good meat that's being wasted. in any case, in Missouri, Mike Liara, a GOP representative, state rep, wants to make...
If you're noticing a trend as to who is introducing these bills...
Our next one is from a Democrat.
Oh, perfect.
But it's a repeal of something stupid, so you'll notice the trend's going to continue. In any case, he wants to make introducing gun control legislation a felony. So that's safe. I don't even have really a joke for that. That's just sort of like, stupid.
Passing a bill to make other bills.
Right, to make other bills a felony.
Yeah. No.
People are... Republicans these days like to make it so that it seems like they can arrest Democrats for doing their job, basically.
Yeah.
In any case, in Virginia, Adam Eben, who's a Democratic state senator, is trying to finally repeal their 136-year-old or something law against cohabitation.
Yes.
Turns out, there's like 140,000 Virginians who are basically criminals under this law, which is, it bans lewd and lascivious cohabitation. Apparently, there are four other states, though, that have cohabitation laws. So, it's like, you know when you go onto those websites, though, that are like, silly laws still on the books, and it's like, you can't wear shorts on a Sunday in a small town. Like, that's like this
I would be willing to guess that the four states that have the cohabitation law probably also have sodomy laws.
Correct. I would guess the same. Also in Virginia, Bob Marshall is trying, who's a delegate. Is trying to get some legislation together so that they can mint their own currency in case the failure, in case the U.S. dollar fails.
Yes. And a proposal to study the idea passed the House of
Delegates. Yeah, so they're really on their way.
So they're moving up.
Hilariously,
The Washington Post hosted a poll asking who should be on Virginia's coins. And the winner, who is a native of Virginia, was Dave Grohl, the frontman of the Foo Fighters.
And wasn't he a member of Nirvana?
Oh, was he? Maybe.
No, that's wrong.
No, he wasn't.
Well, I think
maybe
he was.
I don't know.
That seems like something. If I was going to say it, anyway. I should have known. But in any case,
We make things up.
We make things up all the time. Well, we've just confirmed after a short break that Dave Grohl was in Nirvana. I knew it. In any case, in Montana, again.
Oh yeah. This is sort of crazy,
but also terrifying.
Yeah.
There is a legislator. Also Steve Lavin. Same guy.
God.
What is he up to right now?
Well,
he has introduced Montana House Bill number 486 that would grant a, quote, firm partnership company or corporation that owns property within a district the right to vote as a citizen of that district. Yeah. He is actually taking Mitt Romney's corporations or people, my friend, to the next level. He wants to corporations are going to vote.
Wow.
That's, I mean, I've often said
It was immediately tabled by the state legislature. Well, they're not even going to vote on
it. No, it's crazy.
But still.
I've often said, though, that if we're going to make corporations people, we should go take that to its most practical extreme, because that would really teach everyone a lesson.
I agree.
About
yes.
What it means to have corporations voting,
yeah.
/ giving certain people two votes for unknown reasons and other people only one vote,
yeah.
is what that would actually entail.
Correct.
meanwhile, there were a couple of laws that were just sort of like for political statements. No, like the in Idaho, the Senate Education Committee chair decided to introduce a bill to require every high schooler to read Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah. Here's
just to show the Board of Education that the legislature could change the rules because they repealed a bunch of graduation requirements.
The thing about Atlas Shrugged is that you would need all 4 years that you were in high school to get through the damn thing.
Yeah, because it's a million pages long and it's not that interesting.
Correct.
Meanwhile, in Montana, again, Representative Jerry O'Neill is pushing a bill that would let criminals choose corporal punishment over jail time. Because it would keep families together. And in Oregon, Mitch Greenlick, a Democrat, wants to require a prescription for cigarettes, yeah. which I think we should just go ahead and do. Why not?
Of course you do.
Of course I think yes. that. But he thinks that he's basically doing this because he hopes that they'll pass a cigarette tax, and he thinks it's sort of like a good sort of, you know,
well, he,
statement to make.
This person, Mitch Greenlick, is onto something because he realizes that you have to start full crazy.
Which
to
is,
get where he wants. Everyone should be learning a lesson right now from yeah. Mitch Greenlick because he's doing things right.
Yeah.
He's hoping to get a cigarette tax by coming up with the most bonkers plan yeah. on earth that is not a cigarette
you
tax.
You get a cut in defense spending by putting a bill on the table where you're going to cut all defense spending.
Right, exactly. You're going to abolish the military.
Abolish the military, and then you work from there. You want to get healthcare reform? You put a single payer plan on the table, and you tell them you won't negotiate from anywhere but there. And then let them move you to the right.
Yeah.
From there, at yeah. least. Anyway, okay. we've all learned an important lesson. There's also crazy God. Science news.
Wait,
this isn't
like...
science news, this first one. This is hilarious news.
Yes.
Uh-huh. This is foreign policy news. But it's the kind that we can really get behind.
Yeah, exactly.
The April 6th movement, which is one of the political parties, basically, in Egypt. And they yes. are opponents of Mohamed Morsi, who's the president yes. there now. Entered him into a competition run by
Axe Body Spray.
To... send a lucky few people onto a space shuttle operated by a space tourism company. They basically are...
They've nominated to send Morsi into space. They want to shoot him into space.
And there have been some hilarious tweets as a result of
totally.
This. One of the opponents tweeted, "I just voted for Morsi to go to space. Proudest moment in voting history."
Yeah. And the person who was in second place is like some Egyptian mountain climber, basically. And he's behind by like 22,000 votes. And he tweeted, he said, "That awkward moment when you're confused between fulfilling your dream to go to space and sending your president into orbit." So he actually wants to go to space,
but it's more important to him to send
Morsi there.
Morsi there. meanwhile...
This.
The most terrifying story of the week. Brett and I were in shock for days.
We were chatting
this
about
this.
This
is our worst nightmare.
Online.
Everything about this is awful.
It's terrifying and disgusting and foul. And I was telling somebody about this, too, who were refusing to believe that I had not made this entire story up. Because it sounds
hilarious.
Made up.
Sounds like a comedy act.
Sounds made up.
But it also involves
sounds
snakes,
like a horror movie is what it sounds like.
Snakes, birds, spiders, and mice. All of the worst things in the world. Basically, so Guam is being overrun by
these tree snakes,
which
can grow up to 10 feet long.
Yeah,
so
and
all snakes are gross. Large snakes are gross.
Large snakes are grosser.
Correct.
They arrived like on a plane or on boats during World War II, and then they've been there for 60 years, but they've eaten almost all the birds in Guam.
Right, because they're tree snakes. We said. So
now, because they've eaten almost all the birds, the spider population has exploded.
It's going crazy.
So they have snakes biting people pulling down power lines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They have spiders just like everywhere.
Basically all of Guam has been overtaken by tree snakes and spiders.
Which is the most horrifying combination of things I can imagine in my life.
Yeah. So, and Hawaii is concerned.
Right. Because they have found a couple of brown snakes themselves and they're worried that this will happen to them
right.
as well. So the U.S. government decided to really get ahead of this problem.
Now, the solution to this problem is bonkers.
If that story wasn't already horrifying enough, the plan is to drop mice with tiny parachutes on them.
Poisoned dead mice with parachutes into the trees where they hope the snakes will eat them and then die.
And what are they poisoned with? Acetaminophen.
Acetaminophen. Tylenol.
Tylenol.
Which is toxic to the snakes, apparently.
What?
Dead parachuting poisoned mice?
To what? Solve a snake problem in a country overrun by spiders?
No! Guam sounds... And I loved in this story, too, they were like, Guam's tourism has really been... I was like...
No wonder!
Obviously!
Like, no wonder!
Who wants to go there? Oh my god. But, and even if this works, it's just sort of like, then you've dropped dead rats, and you've got... dead snakes everywhere, and like, you've got just, no...
It's a rodent nightmare.
Just, I think instead is they should just relocate all of the people in right, Guam.
Just let
and they
the
should
snakes
just
have it.
Detonate the fucking place. I mean, it is not doing anybody any favors right now, Guam.
This is like a nightmare. An absolute nightmare.
Oh,
meanwhile...
Killer robots must be stopped.
Apparently,
by the way,
we've got some early action on the robot front. And this is, I mean, this is like a dead serious movement by a group of UK academics who want us to start regulating and, you know, stopping the development of war robots, basically, because they're worried that that's going to change the face of war and we won't be prepared for it. And this is sort of serious because we basically use drones for everything now already. Yeah. So we're already sort of, like, doing a lot of faceless killing. And instead of hiring soldiers, we're hiring, like, video gamers, essentially, to run military operations. But, you know, they've said that robotic warfare has a lot of other issues associated with it. Because once you send robots into combat instead of people, like, they don't have consciences. Mm-hmm. Like, they are robots. And also, they're not responsible for their own actions. Humans made them.
Right.
So, like, this is everyone's worst sci-fi nightmare come to life, basically.
Now, as a fan of Battlestar Galactica, this is also a serious concern for me. Because I have seen what can happen when the robots decide that they don't need you any longer.
Exactly.
It's ugly, people.
It's not what you want.
It's not what you want.
But I mean, they make the point that in the States, we already train more drone pilots than actual aircraft pilots.
Yep.
That's true. And it's sort of, it brings up, you know, a lot of issues with transparency, with the fact that there's not really any legal framework to deal with robot wars.
Yeah, no.
Because there's only movies that deal with that.
Yeah.
And the fallout of robot wars is only known to us on the fictional level. But in any case, that's also a movement that's getting started.
Now, the killer robots are going to be completely irrelevant if we can't get our sinkhole problem under control.
There was another sinkhole in Arizona.
Swallowing
two cars. 120 feet of highway sank like 4 feet. It's terrifying. Where are these sinkholes coming from?
Know.
How do we stop them?
You don't know.
You can't stop them. You can't ever know. It's a disaster. Every moment you could be sitting on a potential sinkhole.
Oh, God.
And if sinkholes weren't bad enough.
I think this is in final news.
This is in final news. Yeah. No, we have two final stories.
Oh, God.
Two final hilarious stories. First of all,
I'm like keeling over in laughter right now. Just
we have
I can't with some of these,
that Glenn Beck was given an opportunity to participate in a WWE fight after he got pissed off because they have created a bunch of like Tea Party characters, and then
what is the WWE doing right now?
Making political statements. Also, well, this is sort of a win-win because they can either be making fun, like Tea Partiers don't know when you're making fun of them because they actually think those things.
Right,
so
exactly.
You can both make a sort of like have like a comedic act. Yes. And everyone who's a Tea Partier will think that they identify with the act, and it's a win-win. Everyone identifies.
Yeah.
So in any case, Glenn Beck was pissed because they were doing these sort of making fun of Tea Party characters, and so they invited him. They made a YouTube video sort of addressing him and saying, "This is my favorite." They said, We're in the entertainment business. Everything we do as our characters is designed to tell stories. Right now, the story we're telling is that Zeb Coulter and Jack Swagger are using current, relevant, and topical story, the topical story of immigration to target the WWE world champion Alberto Del Rio, also a character played by my friend Jose Rodriguez. In our story, we are the antagonist and Alberto is the protagonist.
Yeah.
They, like, gave him a lecture on story structure, basically.
But apparently Glenn Beck had called the WWE stupid wrestling people.
Yeah.
Which is as eloquent as he ever is.
Of probably. Course. And
he
they...
he was probably crying while he said this, actually, too. Or pointing at some sort of graph that he had of the WWE up on some sort of, like, chalkboard that didn't...
Well, and what he took offense to was the fact that these characters, who are Zebediah Coulter and Jack Swagger, call themselves real Americans all the time.
Yes.
Which is what Tea Partiers do. Mm-hmm. So, they're in character offense.
Yeah.
In actual final news.
Yes, which has nothing to do
with... It has nothing to do with politics at all, but it's hilarious.
Yes, because some of you may remember a while back, the New York Times restaurant review of Guy Fieri's restaurant in Times Square was one of the better bad reviews ever written.
Yeah.
It was just so spot on. The whole thing was written as, like, rhetorical questions to Guy Fieri about whether he had sort of, like, actually even eaten the food at the restaurant.
Yeah.
And it was just genius. And Lyle and I are both sort of Food Network junkies.
Right.
And sort of, you know, I am of the group that hates Guy Fieri, yet can't not watch an episode of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
I'm in the same group.
Even if I have seen it anywhere between 1 and 12 times.
Yeah.
Because you've seen all of those.
Right. You've never not seen one of them.
But you also can't watch it. But I am that way with anything on the Food Network.
Yeah.
I will watch a competition show of, like, Chopped, where I know the winner, that I have seen on multiple occasions before. It's a sickness.
I don't like the competition shows, and because of that, I can get really easily sucked into anything that's not a competition show.
Right.
Anything ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
like
I've
Diners,
seen,
Driving the
I've
Ducks.
Seen every episode of Restaurant Impossible
yeah.
at least twice.
I know. And I hate that show, but I watch it.
No, you have to.
Yeah.
Anyway. More so... but it was sort of like a big thing. Like, they were reading excerpts from that review, like, on the Today Show.
Guy
and Guy Fieri had to respond
like,
to it.
Like, American Barn Grill or whatever it's called in Times Square is just, like, the worst possible restaurant idea ever.
Well, it would have to be terrible.
But, apparently, they bought, like, Guy Fieri's AmericanBar.com or something like that, and they did not buy their whole name.
His website is Guy's American.
Guy's American, right.
And so somebody bought up the
Guy's American Bar and Grill
or
whatever.
Right. And put a fake menu on there.
Yeah.
And this person is an American hero.
Yeah.
Because it's only one page. There's
right.
only probably like 15 menu items. But it is we should post it because it's the funniest 10 minutes you can spend on the internet.
Right.
Like, unquestionably, there is nothing funnier on the internet currently other than this podcast.
Right. Our favorite part of this menu was one particular meal that he listed on it called Football the Meal. Which was, quote, warm, broken hamburgers served in a clear plastic bag enclosed in a larger black trash bag thrown at you from 40 yards. There was also an item on the menu called Reno with a bunch of exclamation points.
It's so good.
It was just everything.
Yeah.
If you need a break from talking about politics.
Oh my God.
That's
yeah.
where you should go. In any case, that's finally the news this week.
we sort of knew that this podcast was
going to run long,
somewhere in the hour and a half range. But
we didn't care. No, but it's free. We're recording it for free.
Mm-hmm. So you either stayed with us
or you didn't. That's right. You should have. There was payoff at the end because the end was definitely the best part. But in any case, we will see you next week for our 50th anniversary. This is our 50th week anniversary.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That can't be. No, it's our 51st week. It's our 50th podcast.
Yes.
It's our next week is our 1 year anniversary.
I just got confused in there, but that sounded right.
It was right.
Okay, good.
In any case, we'll see you then. Be good. Look out for our blog on Thursday.
All
right. Bye.
Bye.